The West Live. The West Live with Ben O'Shea.
Australia's COVID vaccine rollout hit a road bump last week when the Prime Minister announced people under 50 shouldn't get the AstraZeneca jab. Then yesterday, news broke that a 48-year-old woman in New South Wales had died after receiving what we believe was AstraZeneca. Joining me now is infectious diseases physician and microbiologist, Professor Paul Griffin. Welcome back to the show, Professor.
Thanks for having me again.
So what do we know about the tragic death of this woman?
We don't really know too many details at the moment. I think we have to remember there's a, a poor patient and their family involved here, and their confidentiality is still very important. So we're yet to actually get too many details, so we need to be really careful making too many assumptions just yet.
And so what is the process for authorities now in investigating this incident?
So the people looking after her and obviously people relating to the relevant regulatory bodies will look very carefully at, evidence of a relationship to the vaccine and obviously look hard for an alternate cause to explain what's happened. I think the key thing to point out in terms of the rare clotting syndrome we're aware of with AstraZeneca, that usually starts somewhere between day 4 and 20. So this would be much less likely to be that syndrome we're aware of. But as I say, we need to work out what's happened exactly here.
And so just so we can understand how this blood clotting syndrome works is how it happens. So what would symptoms include?
Usually with this syndrome, and it's important to point out that it still remains exceedingly rare, usually people will present with a very severe headache, for example, and potentially some neurological symptoms that go along with that. So they might have, for example, confusion or something else like that. So usually the symptoms are fairly significant, and it's just really important to get those investigated quickly if they do arrive.
Yeah, right. So it's not the sort of thing where you could have this jab and not even realise something was going wrong and then have a very serious side effect. It would be something that you would be aware of.
Yeah, that's right. And there's obviously been a lot of education campaigns for primary care physicians and GPs to understand what these symptoms are and to investigate it fairly quickly. There's a pattern of blood tests that we're quite familiar with now that most people should know to do in the event that this is suspected, and those blood tests help us a lot. So we know a lot more about how to look for it and investigate it if people do present concerned about this.
And is there a way to treat it once it is detected?
We're progressing on that front. I mean, we have to say it's been such a rare event still that we don't have a lot of really good evidence on how to treat it because there's been so few events. But we do have some treatments that are likely to help. And it's important to point out that the majority of people that have had this rare syndrome, whilst it's obviously very severe, have still survived. So,
And how rare is it for people to die from the flu vaccine? Just so we can kind of put this into some sort of context.
Yeah, look, it's rare, obviously, for anyone to die from any vaccine. And, if it wasn't extremely rare, then we wouldn't use those vaccines. And, as we've seen with our change of advice for the AstraZeneca vaccine. So I don't have any firm figures on how many people die from that vaccine. But obviously, we've seen lots of comparisons to more commonly used medications. Even, for example, the oral contraceptive pill and other commonly used medications have a rate of significant complications much higher than this vaccine.
And so do you think this latest incident, even though we don't know the full extent of what caused it, means that the AstraZeneca vaccine is pretty much finished as an option in this country?
I think the recommendation that we heard last week is a very good one. And if we use it in accordance with that recommendation, I'm very confident that it remains a safe and effective vaccine. It would look likely that we've had two events that are similar to that clotting syndrome that we've heard about. They've both occurred in people in their low 40s. And with the recommendation that we use this vaccine preferentially in people over 50, then we've actually seen none of these events in this country in that age group. So, again, I think that advice is very good, and I'd encourage people to use the vaccine in accordance with that advice.
Why does age have a role to play in the likelihood of this clotting syndrome presenting?
There are two very important points in terms of the risks and benefits of the vaccine. The first one is about the risks of the vaccine. And in fact, this event, whilst very rare, has occurred predominantly in younger people. So we don't really see it in people over that age of 50. But it also relates to the benefits of the vaccine that are a little bit less in younger people because they're less likely to have significant complications of the infection. So when we look at the benefits and risks, it still favours the vaccine, even in the younger people, but it's a much bigger difference between those two in people over 50. So it certainly makes sense to have an age restriction.
Is there any reason why young people are more prone to it?
We're still working out exactly why. So we don't know for sure, but there's a lot of really good work happening to understand the mechanism. And I think when we do, we'll be able to perhaps refine our advice further. But again, because there's been so few events, we don't have a lot of good data on some of those questions just yet. But it should all come fairly soon, hopefully.
Mm. And do you think it makes it harder for experts like you to preach the message that vaccines are safe when people pick up the newspaper, they watch the TV and they see that there potentially was a death from a vaccine?
I think it does make it challenging, and I think that's why we need people to pay attention to the key messages here. And, you know, if anything, this course of events has shown just how transparent our reporting is, just how much attention we do pay to adverse events after vaccination. And even without a firm link, if there's a suggestion of a link, well, we take action to reduce the chance of further events. So, you know, if anything, while it's obviously been concerning and there's been a lot of attention to it, this should actually show people the strength of our monitoring post-vaccines and how much we do make sure people are safe. So, you know, it's an abundance of caution, but it shows how much we're trying to protect everyone and continue to use this vaccine in a really safe way.
Mm. It looks like now Pfizer and Novavax will play a bigger role in our vaccination strategy here in Australia. What can you tell us about the Novavax jab?
Look, that appears to be a great vaccine. It's one that started its journey in Melbourne last year. I did the phase one clinical trial for that vaccine, and it has been a little slow to progress through the clinical trials, but not because it's had any issues. There's just been some challenges getting patients into those trials. And as soon as we have those trials completed and we have that data, I expect that vaccine to also be available for use in this country. But the important thing to say is that it's a different class of vaccine, a different type to both Pfizer and AstraZeneca, and it's one that is looking very safe and effective in the trial. So that will be a welcome addition to our strategy when it's available.
Mm. And the PM now says the majority of Aussies will be vaccinated by the end of the year, pushed back from October, as he initially predicted. Others have said it might not happen until the end of next year. What do you think is a realistic timeline?
I really think we still need to aim for the end of this year. I think it's going to be really important that we try and get people vaccinated this year. It may well be that even people that have the Pfizer need a booster at around that 12-month mark. Data's still to come on that, but it's looking a possibility. And I think we really need to try to have everyone who wants to get vaccinated have their first round of vaccines before we need to start giving people their second round. So I think aiming for the end of this year is really important. And hopefully with Novavax coming online before that, that should be possible.
Mm. And would you be very concerned if the international borders opened and the majority of Australians weren't vaccinated?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think when the international borders open, we really need to shift our focus. And, you know, what we see of the virus in this country will be very different. We will see cases in the community. We'll see local transmission, that thing we've been trying to prevent so much. And if we don't have enough people vaccinated, well, it could certainly get away from us. So, you know, part of being able to do that safely will be to have enough people vaccinated.
Mm. Professor Paul Griffin, thanks for being on the show again.
A pleasure. Thank you.